The following program, The Russ Belville Show, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate to the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate any illegal activity and encourage all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers on The Russ Belville Show are their own, and The Russ Belville Show cannot be held legally responsible for their validity or reliability. Viewer discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it.
And it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization. Of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Yeah, I hear you had a question for me.
Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
We love it.
All right, good day, tokers and tokettes, and welcome. It is Wednesday, July 17th. 2013, and I begin today's show on a bit of a sad note. I found out last night that a woman I was engaged to in the 1990s, her name is Stephanie Priest, was killed in a rollover accident today on Highway 55 north of Donnelly. And I just wanted to dedicate this show to her memory. And I'm really sad, Stephanie, that you're gone from us. And I wish we'd have had time to get together and talk or see each other in the intervening years. But just a reminder, folks, for a couple of things. Get in touch with someone that you haven't talked to in a long time. Time is short. You never know when somebody's going to be gone. And number two, wear your fucking seatbelts. Please, please wear your seatbelts. All right. On today's show, we have got a guest from Moms for Marijuana. It's our Listen to Your Mother segment. So we're going to be speaking with Patty Mary. She is from Moms for Marijuana in North Dakota. Imagine trying to fight for marijuana legalization in a place like North Dakota. We're going to talk to her about that, how she got involved in the movement, and what it means to her as a mother to fight for marijuana legalization. Also on today's show, there is a report out from the Government Accountability Office, the GAO, on the 21st century drug policies of President Barack Obama. They basically reviewed five of Obama's goals with respect to drug policy and evaluated how well the administration in its first term has achieved those goals or not. And we'll give you the results of that in today's Behind the Headlines. Actually, I think, today that's going to be in the Radical Rant. In Behind the Headlines today, we're going to talk about Olympic snowboarder Ross Rebagliotti. Remember him? He was in 1998, the Nagano Games. He was the first Olympic gold medal snowboarder who then tested positive for marijuana and lost his gold medal. There was a big controversy, and he later got it back. We'll take a look at that, and we'll take a look at how he is opening a dispensary in Whistler, British Columbia, and the effect of drug testing on athletes in all sorts of sports. Kind of a preview of my High Times article coming out in November. Also on today's show, we've got a look at a new pocket-sized drug test that's scary as hell. And Brian the Red will bring us some great reggae music from Inca Inca for our daily Toker Tunes. The Russ Belville Show on 420 Radio. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Business, you know why they won't let us grow. It's simply business.
We'll be right back after these messages from our 420 friendly sponsors. Support these advertisers because their ad money goes straight to the Russ Belville Show. You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
It's simply business. It's simply business. It's simply business. You know why they won't let us grow. simply business. It's simply business. You know why they won't let us grow. It's simply business.
The law offices of Omar Figueroa would like to remind you to stand up for your rights. Please do not give up your precious liberties. There's nothing wrong with standing up for our constitutional rights, and in fact, it's the only way to honor the Constitution that recognizes our natural rights. Treat law enforcement with respect, and respect the Constitution by standing up for your rights. If you are detained or arrested, stand up for your rights by repeating, "I respectfully invoke all my legal and constitutional rights. I do not consent to any search and seizure. I want to remain silent, and I want to speak to my attorney, Omar Figueroa." Omar Figueroa has more than a decade of experience in federal and California courts and graduated from Yale University, Stanford Law School, and Trial Lawyers College. Please contact the law offices of Omar Figueroa at 415-489-0420 or 707-829-0215 or on the web at www.omarfigueroa.com.
This is your 420 Radio News for Wednesday, July 17th, 2013. I'm Russ Belleville. Combative farm bill debate doesn't eliminate hemp measure from final measure. From Sustainable Business Oregon, the U.S. House passed farm bill contains a provision that could make industrial hemp farming legal after all. While Representative Earl Blumenauer and other Democrats blasted the bill's final version, the Portland Democrat lauded the amendment that would allow colleges and universities to grow and cultivate industrial hemp for academic and agricultural research purposes. The House passed the farm bill by a 216 to 208 count last Thursday. Each of the 196 Democrats in the House voted against it. The hemp measure would only apply in states such as Oregon, where industrial hemp growth and cultivation is already legal. Medical marijuana and voter ID bills yet to reach the governor, from Boston.com. Seriously ill New Hampshire residents anxious for Governor Maggie Hassan to sign a law legalizing marijuana use to treat their illnesses will have to wait a little longer. The legislature passed the bill on June 26th. House Speaker Terry Norelli has the bill on her desk and is expected to sign it and send it to Senate President Peter Bragdon this week. Once he signs the bill, it will go to the governor. The bill will make New Hampshire the 19th state to legalize possession and use of the drug. The compromise passed last month eliminated an option for patients to also grow marijuana at home. Hassan said she wouldn't sign the bill if it included those provisions. To qualify for medical marijuana, New Hampshire residents would have to have been a patient of the prescribing doctor for at least 90 days, have tried other remedies, and have exhibited certain symptoms. Pocket-sized drug test could quickly identify abusers, from Newswise.com. The National Institute of Drug Abuse has agreed to award $2.1 million to Lidong Kin, Ph.D., and Ping Wang, Ph.D., of Houston Methodist Research Institute to develop a pocket-sized drug test for use in healthcare settings. The three-year project aims to modify an existing device that is about as big as a business card and can produce test results in minutes, speeding the treatment of patients in emergency rooms, for example. In previous studies, the device was shown to be sensitive down to the nanogram per milliliter level, which is sufficient for drug testing purposes. The device is called the V-chip, short for volumetric bar chart chip. It is composed of two thin 3-inch by 2-inch slides of glass. As drugs bind to antibodies bound on the glass slide, expanding oxygen pushes dye up a column. The end result is a visual bar chart that Kin says is easy to read and accurate. Double homicide at medical marijuana shop, from BakersfieldCalifornian.com. Two people were fatally shot inside a medical marijuana shop. Bakersfield police spokeswoman Michaela Beard said the department received a call at 9:49 a.m. of a shooting inside a medical marijuana collective. Officers found two people dead inside. A dark-colored SUV was seen speeding from the area, Beard said. She said the investigation was in the early stages and that a motive was unknown, as was whether the victims were employees or customers. Bridget Daniels said she received a call from a family friend that her 23-year-old son was one of the victims. Daniels said her son was an unarmed security guard for the business, and he worked there every day. Ypsilanti City Council approves cap on medical marijuana facilities, from AnnArbor.com. The city of Ypsilanti will limit the number of medical marijuana dispensaries and grow facilities allowed to operate in the city. At its meeting Tuesday night, the Ypsilanti City Council approved the first reading of an ordinance capping the number of facilities at 9. That leaves space for 2 more grow operations and 1 more dispensary, and 3 facilities already have their paperwork in with the city. The Michigan Medical Marijuana Act passed overwhelmingly in Ypsilanti, but the act doesn't include any language on the legality of dispensaries and grow operations. Mayor Paul Schreiber said he preferred a solid cap not determined by zoning. Quote, "Alcohol has license limits, and I don't see why we should not have them for medical marijuana," he said. "I think it's good that we know how many licenses are available instead of relying on zoning where medical marijuana is located," end quote. We also want to make note of a special fundraiser that we've got going for the Idaho 3 to help Lindsey Reinhart and her family escape the state of Oregon, Idaho, and make their way to the state of Oregon, where the family can be safe and she can use medical marijuana to treat her multiple sclerosis. If you can help, just log on to 420radio.org. We'll have a post up later today on how you can donate. This has been your 420 Radio News for Wednesday, July 17th, 2013. I'm Russ Belville. When we come back, we go behind the headlines and take a look at Olympic snowboarder Ross Ribagliotti and his opening of a dispensary in Whistler, British Columbia. This is the Russ Belville Show on 420radio.org. We'll be right back.
I'm Sub Cool from Team Green Avenger. At TGAGenetics.com, we are working on the leading edge of medical strains. Our strains are rigorously tested for THC, CBD, THCV, and other critical cannabinoids. Know your grow. Check out our genetic diversity at TGAGenetics.com, the home of Jelly Bean, Jack the Ripper, Vortex, and other award-winning cannabis strains.
Escondido, High Times Magazine, here with another video grow tip of the week. We're here in a little hydroponic garden. It's a very manageable operation. Some of you might be doing something similar at home or thinking of it. And we just wanted to show you a little bit about the feeding system, the irrigation system, if you will, that they've implemented in this grow room. Because it's one of the more popular varieties these days. It's very simple. It's a top feed hydro system. And if you just look right down here in the pot, you'll see right at the top they're using top hat spray emitters staked into the medium, and they just are fed by spaghetti lines, and they just do a little top feed. They just spray 360 degrees all the way around. It gets even penetration. And this grower, he does it very simply. They just water for about two minutes per day. That's all it takes, 2 minutes per day. They got 4,000 watts running in this room, and it's going to yield somewhere around 7 pounds. And they're using a nutrient line called Black Label Nutrients. It's very simple. And it's amazing that they get these yields. If you look, the NPK ratios are very low. And with a feeding regimen of only 2 minutes per day, but you still see the weight, the chunkiness of these buds. This is an OG pheno. It's in week 7. It'll go just past 60 days, I believe. And the yield is epic. So there you go. If you're thinking about doing some hydro, check out some top feed systems. Spray emitters are great. And you want to find a nutrient line that has a minimalistic approach, you know, something that's not going to clog up your spaghetti lines. It's going to get, you know, just the right amount of nutrients to the plants so that they're happy and healthy. And man, all I can say is I wish they were coming down today, but they're not. See you guys later. Nico out.
Through the water, in the sky.
You're listening to 420radio.org. Make it a little fiery.
Hey, sit back, relax, and have a puff or two. 'Cause all we really trying to do is get high with you. That's just how we do. Sit back, relax.
Welcome back, everybody. Time for us to go behind the headlines, and we're coming to you live from Lindsey Reinhardt's house here in Boise, Idaho. And we'll be speaking with Lindsey in hour two. There's a very special fundraiser they're putting together, and we're going to talk to Lindsey about that in hour two, so stick around. But right now, I wanted to talk about this story that came up in USA Today. You may remember all the way back in 1998, 15 years ago, I think it was the first Winter Olympics that they actually moved to the odd, well, not odd years, but the every other 2 year thing. Like the Winter Olympics and Summer Olympics used to be in the same year, and now they're split every 2 years, right? Well, 98 in Nagano, Japan, I think was the first time they had split those Olympics up. And it was also the first time they had a brand new sport in the Winter Olympics, snowboarding. And the first guy to ever win an Olympic gold medal in snowboarding was named Ross Ribagliotti. And there was a controversy because he won the gold medal, and then subsequent drug testing showed he was positive for marijuana. They took his gold medal from him, and then he appealed and fought that, and since it hadn't actually been under the performance-enhancing drugs statute, he was able to get his gold medal back. But since then, Ross Ribagliotti has been, you know, a very prominent supporter of marijuana. And next month, he's opening a medical marijuana dispensary in Whistler, British Columbia, the big ski resort up there in Whistler, called Ross's Gold. And also, he's kind of become the public face for pot-smoking athletes. You know, whenever somebody gets busted in athletics for smoking pot, you know, all the media all give Ross a call for, so, to give his, you know, opinion on this subject. Well, now he's 42 years old, and he believes that the changing attitudes toward marijuana means that we should just remove it from the list of substances on the World Anti-Doping Agency list of banned substances, World Anti-Doping Agency, also known as WADA, W-A-D-A. And he just says, basically, since it's legal for medicinal purposes in Canada and in 19 U.S. states, 18 U.S. states, that there's really no reason, and legal in Washington and Colorado, there's really no reason for it to be on the prohibited substances list. Now, WADA has responded previous to they actually didn't respond to Ribagliotti, but they've responded to this general call for a change in drug testing due to a couple of the failures in the most recent Olympics in London. Stephanie Lee, America's number one 72 kilogram female wrestler, was disqualified for testing positive at the trials in Iowa. We had her on the show and interviewed her about the situation. She's a medical user for various reasons. We also had Nick DiPopolo, who was the judoka, U.S. judoka, judo master for the 73 kilogram weight class, was disqualified. So after this happened, a lot of people complained that you're testing at such a low level, you're going to catch people who used it weeks or months ago rather than people that are using it in competition. So WADA has actually raised its threshold. And remember, they're testing THC-Ku. They're testing carboxy-THC, the metabolites in your urine. And they're raising the threshold from 15 nanograms per milliliter to 150 nanograms per milliliter. And when Ribagliotti tested positive at Nagano, he was at 17.8. So had these rules been in effect, we wouldn't have even had to have the controversy about Ross Ribagliotti's gold medal. In 2003, according to the statistics for WADA, they say that cannabinoids accounted for almost 14%, something like 13.9% of all adverse analytical findings. That is a failed drug test. The only things that were more likely to be found than cannabinoids in an athlete's system were anabolic agents such as testosterone and stimulants, right? So actual performance-enhancing drugs were more likely to be found than cannabinoids. But in 2011, WADA reported that there were only 7.9% of its violations were for cannabis, so a decrease of almost half in the number of violations that they're finding. And this affects people, you know, athletes all throughout so many different sports. Of course, I told you Stephanie Lee and Nick DiPopolo. We also had the boxer Julio Cesar Chavez, who was fined $900,000. UFC fighter Pat Healy had to surrender $130,000 over positive marijuana tests. And the combat sports agencies don't want this either. It's just ruining athletes' careers for no decent reason. And especially when they should be using cannabis for healing and for pain relief instead of all these other drugs they take. Oh, we got to take a break.
Have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. He Have you ever met that funny reefer man? Reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would sell you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
What makes something funny? How does humor impact health and psychological well-being? How can you incorporate humor into everyday life? A concise, reader-friendly introduction to an important but often underappreciated topic in modern psychology, Humor 101 explains the role of comedy, jokes, and wit in the sciences and discusses why they are so important to understand. Psychology professor Dr. Mitch Earlywine draws from his personal experiences in stand-up comedy to focus on how humor can regulate emotion, reduce anxiety, and diffuse tense situations, expose pretensions, build personal relationships, and much more. He irreverently debunks the pseudoscience on the topic of humor and leaves readers not only funnier, but better informed. It's part of the Psych 101 series from Springer Publishing, Humor 101.
I have the freedom to think however I want. This is the United States of America, and I think I'll let Terry do the thinking for me. Terry Joyce puts the probe back in prohibition. Terry Joyce knows more about conspiracy theories than anyone in the United States of America, and that's because she makes up most of them. Terry Joyce can host a show like no one's ever seen, but that's only because no one's ever seen her host a show before. That's why I'm asking you to watch the Hollywood Hempress Hour with Terry Joyce, and you can trust me because I'm a warlock. Witch's honor.
Everyone knows music and marijuana go together, so let's wind up our 20 after break with the Russ Belleville Show's Daily Toker Tunes, the best in pod-safe 420 music from around the web. Today is Irie Wednesday, featuring reggae, ska, and other world music genres. You can get downloads and more information about all our Daily Toker Tunes by visiting music.radicalrust.com. Now, sit back and enjoy your Daily Toker Tunes.
Welcome back, everybody, and today, more than just about any other Wednesday, I need some Irie. So I'm going to turn things over to Brian the Red, who's got our Irie Wednesday Daily Toker Tune.
Well, I'd love to oblige you with some Irie, of course, but, this one's more kind of, about the fight, the struggle, you know, the wars that are going on against people, mm-hmm. Basically, it says a war against any nation is still a civil war, you know, and we are fighting a war right now. We're fighting for our lives, you know, in this war against American citizens who chose to use cannabis or chose to know the truth, you know, and spread the truth. I'm just going to go ahead and get to the song because I'm still kind of emotional from this last weekend. I've been going through the video footage I took at the Trayvon Martin rally, and we'll be bringing you some of that pretty soon. Hopefully I'll have some of it ready tomorrow, but it's just so hard to sort through. I personally got up and spoke, but mine were pale words in comparison to the emotion that was felt that day. But we're going
to get many battles to fight, so many wars that we still have to fight to make sure that everyone is treated fairly, equally, and decently in this world.
Well, actually, it looks like I got to grab that track because Russ didn't load it.
Oh, I did not. My apologies there. But thank you, Brian, for that, because this Trayvon Martin case, if you don't know, I have got a post up on Huffington Post. If you want justice for Trayvon Martin, legalize drugs. And I really do believe that the war on drugs and the way that it has, you know, created a stereotype of a black criminal and the way that we have over arrested and over incarcerated young black males is partially to blame for the initial profiling that led to Trayvon Martin's death. So I feel that if we can end this war on drugs, return justice to our streets, turn our police officers back into peace officers, and get our neighborhoods, you know, and get our cops in the neighborhoods to know who's there and what's going on and keep the people safe, that'll help us a lot. Here's Inca Inca. Thank you, Brian.
All of them, I won't teach you to. kill their brethren. Oh, can't you see? A war against any nation is still a civil war. A war against any nation is still a civil war. And a sinful war. A war against any nation is still a civil war. A war against any nation is still a civil war. Civil war, civil war, right now. All of you black soldiers, you better wake up. All you war generals, I say, you better wake up. All you in high power, you better wake up. You false patriots, wake up now, right now.
My girlfriend thinks that I smoke too much pot. Which is crazy, because I think, on the other hand, that I don't smoke enough pot, because if I did, I would be finished, and I'm not. Look. We all have our vices in life, you know? I like to smoke a little weed. She likes to feed the baby. Different strokes for different folks, I say, huh? I'm like, look, get off my back. Isn't that your baby crying? Sorry, our baby. Blow a little weed on it. It'll sleep. Don't hiss, I'm just kidding. Like, I really have a girlfriend. Just a baby, it's weird.
Are you or is someone you know a marijuana smoker? Have you or is someone in your family been arrested for a marijuana violation? You need to know the truth about pot. NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, is the most comprehensive source of information regarding marijuana and its effects on health, as well as legal issues. NORML even offers a database of lawyers specializing in cannabis in your area. NORML, the nation's largest and most successful marijuana law reform organization, has spent decades gathering the knowledge and science on everything related to cannabis. NORML is the best resource to find out the truth about marijuana, connect with a lawyer in your area, or help find an end to prohibition. Information is available at normal.org, that's NORML.org, or toll free at 888-67-NORMAL.
Activism begins with ACT. The Russ Belleville Show features the stories of hardworking grassroots activists working for an end to prohibition in today's activist agenda.
The hour time for our Listen to Your Mother segment in our activist agenda. And joining us from probably one of the most difficult places to be a medical marijuana activist, Fargo, North Dakota. Is that right? We got Patty Mary on the line.
Hi.
Hi, Patty. How are you?
I'm hanging in there. It's pretty hot up here. How are you?
Pretty hot in Fargo, North Dakota. What's the temp out there?
We are sitting at 98 hot degrees.
What? 98 degrees in Fargo? That's crazy. Oh, man. Don't worry. There is no such thing as global warming. Anyway, right. Let's get into our topic today. You're with Moms for Marijuana International, and you're coordinating out there in North Dakota. When did you get involved with that?
In North Dakota, a couple years ago, last year, I fought for the ballot. I was out there getting signatures every day, only for our lovely football team to forge signatures. Mm-hmm. So we were tossed out over that. That was a huge disappointment.
Yeah, and if folks, if you don't know what we're talking about there, North Dakota, you have the initiative process. You're trying to get, and this is an initiative for medical, if I understand right, and some of the hired petition gatherers who were football players there at the local university went and screwed you over.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep, and they got a slap on the wrist. They, you know, forgery, and they walked.
Was this a situation where they were getting paid per signature or something like that?
They were getting paid per hour, and it was, $15 an hour.
Hmm. Well, it's a shame that happened, but how is the support there as you were going out and getting signatures? Did you feel like the people of North Dakota are ready for this?
Yes. Yes, they are. The support was amazing, from nurses to doctors to, you know, lawyers, just everyday mothers, fathers. It was amazing.
Yeah, that's good. That's really, really good to hear, because I think a lot of people out there listening would think of North Dakota as very rural and very conservative. So what is it that you think has turned people around on wanting to support this issue?
Well, you know, being lied to, and now just things coming out about more awareness of what cannabis can do for us. And I've ran across many nurses, for example, that would say they're tired of seeing cancer patients, you know, die horribly. And
yeah,
I'm sure that could just, that's probably one of them right there.
Yeah, I would think so. Now, what is it that brought you to getting involved in this activism?
I am sick, and I need it. And not to be able to have it and be treated like a criminal, it sucks. It really sucks.
And you've been able to treat your condition on other occasions with cannabis and found it to be, you know, superior to the other medications?
You bet. I come from Colorado, and, gosh, I remember way back in the days before it was even legalized, being down in Casa Park rallying and, you know what, and I was 16, 17 then, and I knew that there was something to this plant.
So what, why, if you're sick and you need it, why leave Colorado and return to North Dakota?
Well, I didn't become sick until I was in this great state of North Dakota.
Gotcha, okay.
And you know, I hear a lot, why don't you just move? And that's great. I would love to go back home, but the circumstances aren't going to make, you know, I can't make it back there right now. And I also would like to rally on the state of North Dakota. Let's get this done, because we need to be done with this prohibition. It's stupid.
You know, and you know, when I hear that, because I'm coming to you right here from Boise, Idaho, at the home. I'm at the home at Lindsay Reinhardt's house, and she's a patient in Idaho, you know, another place where it's tough to fight for medical marijuana. And people have said that to her, too. They've said, well, if you're sick, why don't you just move to a medical marijuana state? Like, number one, like, it's easy to just up and move in this country. But number two, why should someone be forced to leave their home because they're sick?
Right. And what makes the other states so more special than my state? I mean, we're all one in this, aren't we? So, I mean, there's no difference.
So what's happening now as far as trying to get something passed for North Dakota? Is there a new initiative?
Not yet. I have talked to some legislators, and they seem to think it won't pass, but we'll keep our fingers crossed and keep forging forward and see what we can come up with. And education and awareness and discussion is the key.
Yeah, and you know, one of the tough things about being an activist in a small state, and I don't mean geographically small, but population-wise, there's not a whole lot of people in North Dakota, just like there's not a whole lot of people in Idaho. And when you stick your head up, you're the first gopher that they want to pound down, right? Everybody else is kind of keeping in the closet, being secretive about their use. And when you stand up to be an activist and to try to pass an initiative, it puts a target on your back. So how has that felt? And have you been able to stay out of trouble? Has there been any repercussions from your activism?
Not so far, thank God. I stay out of trouble as much as I can. My kids have recently, I had the discussion with them. I had to sit down with all of them. My oldest, no, she's 20. And I had to sit down with my 16-year-old, my 13-year-old, and my 10-year-old and just say, hey, you know, this is how it is. And they accepted it. And so I one of them just might be a future activist.
Well, that's good to hear. I know one of the scary things about being an activist and a mom is the way that family services, child protective services, can be brought in these situations where they say, well, just because you had marijuana, you're endangering your child. Has this caused you to have to go into any other, you know, greater security or being careful?
Oh, I am. I don't. It's, you know, it's not around. It's not in the house. It's nothing like that. So it's, yeah, you have to be pretty safe up here. Because, you know, especially when you're drawing attention to yourself and then they want to come around. And I've already had them in my house asking many questions, but it's just because I talk openly with my children. And it's a shame that they can't talk openly with their mm-hmm. friends. My 10-year-old, he had a young kid in his class that had cancer, and he really wanted to speak to her about Rick Simpson's oil.
Sure. Boy, it's just such a shame, you know, that this knowledge can't be passed on the people that need it because of the fear.
Very much so.
Now,
and I'm excited that I'm in the organization with Moms for Marijuana. They're such wonderful women. And
oh yeah, and I think, you know, it's the coalition of women getting together trying to fight this drug war that's really going to, you know, push it over the tipping point. Your Moms for Marijuana doing great work. Before we get to another question, why don't you tell people how they can get in touch with you if they're in North Dakota and want to be a part of Moms for Marijuana in North Dakota?
They can reach me on Facebook. It's the North Dakota Moms for Marijuana. And there's also the Fargo Moms for Marijuana. That's the subchapter. They can also look for me on Twitter, and that's MMJ Mom.
All right.
That's about it right there.
MMJ Mom. You got that one. That's a good Twitter handle there. We're speaking with Patty Mary from North Dakota Moms for Marijuana, and regarding, you know, trying to get an initiative passed there in North Dakota, I'm just checking the Google, and I see, I'm trying to find out how many signatures you guys need. Do you know what your signature count is needed for an initiative there?
At the time, it was a little over 17,000, but we ended up with over 21. Mm-hmm. And even after they threw out the ones that they forged, I still believe we were over.
Hmm. And then probably they check their validity rate and then all that kind of stuff. And they always try to find a way to deny these sorts of petitions. So, and people listening, if you've been a petitioner in another state, you've been in California or Oregon or Washington, and you're hearing this and you're going 17,000 signatures. Well, could do that in an afternoon, right? Well, we're talking about a state where there's 700,000 people, and it's really big. So, Patty, is there any rules when you're getting these signatures? Like, there have to be so many from each district or anything like that? Or can you just hit the city?
You just hit the city, and you try and get the downtown was the best. There were places I was kicked out of. You know, we had their guidelines where we had to stay, one place I got kicked out of, but then I was called my director right away, and then they got me in, but then we just figured it wasn't worth it to stick around that area, so.
Yeah, well, at least you don't have that district requirement. There's some states where their signature gathering, you can't just go to the big cities. You have to get a certain percentage from each county or district, and so at least you don't have that to fight with. All right, so in North Dakota, what's it like as far as just being a cannabis consumer? I imagine the penalties are pretty dire.
Oh, they are. You can go to jail for a long time, and it's strict. Minnesota on the other side, it's decriminalized. So you just get a little fine, slap on the wrist. You know, if you got I think it's less than an ounce.
Yeah, but, I think it's less than an ounce.
Here now over the border, it's pretty harsh.
Is there any, you know, we've been talking about a medical marijuana petition, but you just mentioned Minnesota being decriminalized, and that's something that happened in the 1970s. Would there be any support for decriminalization, maybe as a cost-saving measure in North Dakota?
Wow. You know, I wouldn't even know if they would even be up to that.
Yeah. It might be a while before we can get people's minds around that idea. Now, when you tell people that you're with a group called Moms for Marijuana, does that raise any eyebrows when you're talking to other women in North Dakota?
Yes. Yes, it does, because they wonder, what are you? What do you do? And we're not a bunch of pot smokers or anything like that. We're a grassroots network of parents and citizens around the world. And we just focus on cannabis awareness, education, discussion. You know, it's time to thoroughly research and openly discuss the many benefits of this cannabis plant. You know, how the war on marijuana is negatively affecting the future generations of this earth. You know, it's just terrible.
Yeah, it sure is. Well, Patty Mary, activists like you that are fighting in those deep red states are some of my favorite people in the world. Thanks for joining us here, and good luck with Moms for Marijuana in North Dakota.
Thank you so much, Rush.
All right, stay tuned. Radical Rant is next. We're looking at the GAO report on Obama's 21st century drug war policies.
We'll be right back after these messages from our 420 friendly sponsors. Support these advertisers because their ad money goes straight to the Russ Belville Show. You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. Belville Show.
I'm not very good at singing songs, but here's a try.
According to lifelong pot smoker and rocket scientist Carl Sagan, making apple pies from scratch is extremely difficult.
If you wish to make an apple pie from scratch, you must first invent the universe.
Radical Russ and the Rolla J Studios crew will be right back after these messages.
A morning filled with 400 billion suns. The rising of the moon.
You want answers?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
You want answers?
You have offended my family.
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth.
And you have offended a Shaolin temple.
You can't handle the truth.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious, and don't call me Shirley.
Radical Rant.
Welcome back, folks. In today's Radical Rant, we're going to take a look at a piece that was written up in psmag.com entitled, Is Obama Delivering on His Promise of a 21st Century Approach to Drugs? Now, you know, we've covered this kinder, gentler drug war for a while here at the Russ Belville Show, and we've shown the meet the new boss, same as the old boss. We've shown you the statistics of how Obama is not that much different than Bush with regard to recreational marijuana and far worse on medical marijuana. We've covered this in various different angles, but today I am so happy to see the government itself is beginning to agree with us. That's right. The Government Accountability Office produced a report here that was released just yesterday, I believe. And according to this report, they say when the Obama administration released its 2013 drug control strategy, drug czar Gil Kerlikowske called it a 21st century approach to drug policy. Quote, it should be a public health issue, not just a criminal justice issue. End quote. But again, the GAO has just released this report, and this is what the report found. Quote, as of March 2013, GAO's analysis showed that of the five goals for which primary data on results are available, one shows progress, and four show no progress. That's 20%, Mr. Obama, and every school I ever went to, that was an F. For instance, GAO found that there's actually been an increase in HIV transmissions among drug users and drug-related deaths, as well as no difference in drug use among teenagers. So much for the 21st century approach. Here are some of the points made in Obama's 2013 drug control strategy, some of the bullet points that were their goals, And now that we've had 4 years to see how well their new 21st century, kinder, gentler approach has fared, we're not seeing much in the way of results. The first point Obama made was break the cycle of drug use, crime, delinquency, and incarceration. They also go on to say, quote, we cannot arrest our way out of the drug problem, end quote. Yet they still arrest people for drugs, but we cannot arrest our way out of the drug problem. And sure enough, there have been fewer drug arrests. According to the FBI, drug arrests dropped from 1.8 million in 2007 to 1.5 million in 2011. But overall, the government spends roughly the same proportion on the drug policy budget on law enforcement as was spent during Bush's final years in office. So they're spending as much or more money and arresting fewer people. That's actually more of a waste, isn't it? More money spent per arrest? In President Obama's 2014 budget proposal, 38% of the budget is allocated for domestic drug law enforcement, and another 20% allocated to crack down on drugs in the U.S. borders and abroad. And this is where we've pointed out that the Obama administration's budgets are 58% toward law enforcement and the, can't do the math in my head off the top of my head here, 42%, thank you, 42% related to drug treatment. And that 3-2 disparity of about 60-40 or close to it is the same ratio we found in the George W. Bush administration. In fact, Bush's ratio was a little bit lower in a couple of those years. The other thing the Obama administration has done is renewed funding for the Justice Assistant Grant Program. Now, this was formerly known as the Byrne Grants, and what those are grants from the federal government to local law enforcement for the express purpose of catching people for drugs. Federal government doesn't give any money to local law enforcement to catch rapists or murderers or molesters or arsonists or burglars or thieves or vandals. But they give federal tax money, billions of dollars, to local law enforcement so they can buy, you know, up armored vehicles and Kevlar body armor and, you know, stealth, whatever. Obama has raised that money. And that money, those Byrne Grant monies, essentially amount to a profit motive for policing drug crimes over other crimes. Also, according to the Bureau of Justice Statistics, some good news, the number of inmates in state prisons dropped roughly 2% from 2010 to 2011. But most of that, 70%, is because of a decrease in California's prison population after the Supreme Court forced them to release prisoners because they were too overcrowded. And guess which prisoners have to get released first? It's not the drug prisoners, because a lot of them have mandatory minimum sentences. So, yes, we have fewer prisoners, but a lot of that is because we're releasing actual criminals in California so that we can make room for all the drug users. Also, according to the Congressional Research Report, the number of inmates in federal prisons continues to rise, increasing over 3% from 2010 to 2011. And over half the federal prison population is drug offenders. Another bullet point in the 2013 drug control strategy, support alternatives to incarceration. Now, the president has requested $85 million to go to drug courts. Since 1999, drug courts have increased from just about 500 to 2,734 today. And we can spend a whole rant on what the problem is with drug courts, specifically for marijuana users. And that is, they treat all marijuana use as abuse. They send people to rehab that don't need rehabilitation, and they end up taking a space from someone who actually needs it. And a 2011 GAO report found that while drug courts reduced recidivism, there's not enough data to fully assess their effectiveness. Another bullet point from the Obama administration, increase addiction treatment services. And indeed, Obama has increased funding for addiction treatment, $9 billion in his latest budget. That's up 18%. But despite that, only 1 in 10 of the 21.6 million Americans who need drug or alcohol addiction treatment was able to actually get it. The number of people receiving treatment has stayed the same since about 2002. Now, some of this may change because as Obamacare goes into effect, the Health Care Act, people with drug addictions can finally get that covered on their insurance. So that is a definite positive of the Obama drug control strategy, that people can use their insurance funds. Once Obamacare goes into effect, they can use their insurance funds to be able to pay for drug treatment. And again, we're not anti-drug treatment here at the Russ Belleville Show. Drug treatment saved my father's life. But people have to choose it. People have to want it. You can't force them to get better for their own good. And another Associated Press analysis says that when Obamacare kicks in, these current clinics will be overwhelmed because the state-level budget cuts have gone strongly against the drug treatment facilities. And treatment centers in two-thirds of the United States are at or over 100% capacity. So while the federal government may allow you the insurance to be able to get drug treatment, there might not be a bed available for you. And especially when these beds are taken up by people arrested for marijuana and sent there by a drug court. Another point for the Obama administration was to review laws and regulations that impede recovery from addiction. The collateral consequences, you know, the public benefits, unemployment, getting kicked out of Section 8 housing. But the problem with that, while Housing and Urban Development has told public housing not to disqualify former drug users from public housing or Section 8, the city housing authority gets to determine its own rules with respect to that. And a lot of them, most of them, ignore HUD and go ahead and discriminate against prior drug users. They have the goal of reducing drug-induced deaths, and the GAO notes that drug-induced deaths and emergency room visits increased from 2009 to 2010, and most of it likely due to pharmaceutical abuse, which contributes to many more overdose deaths than illegal drugs or alcohol. Now, one good thing Obama did in 2009, he attempted to end the federal ban on clean needle exchange programs, you know, for people intravenous drug users. But Congress wouldn't let him do that, so we can't really hang that on him. And finally, Obama's goal for the 2013 was to curtail illicit drug consumption in America. Well, the GAO notes the prevalence of drug use among teens and young adults has stayed the same since 2009. Now, this just goes to show that the new window dressing of this war on certain American citizens using non-pharmaceutical, non-alcoholic, tobacco-free drugs is just that, window dressing. If you continue to treat adult responsible drug use as if it's a crime, and adult drug abuse if it's a crime, you're going to continue to get the results that we've gotten for the past 40 years, Mr. Obama. It's meet the new boss, same as the old boss. It's a prison with bars or a prison with a drug rehab counselor, but it's still a prison. You're still punishing people for what they do to themselves. We need to legalize not just marijuana, but legalize drug use, decriminalize drug use. Nobody should be a criminal simply for what they do to themselves. Now, if they affect other people, I'm all for getting law enforcement involved and protecting the rights of other people. But as Obama still remains opposed to legalization, it's time for us to yell louder and louder for him to get the hint. And maybe by the end of this term, maybe as he's leaving office, he can leave us with some decent drug policy. Governor Corzine did it in New Jersey. Could happen here. That's all the time we got for hour one here. Toker Talk Radio is next. We'll be talking with Lindsey Reinhart live here in Boise, Idaho. For Brian and the Red back in Portland, I'm Radical Russ. Until next time, take care of each other, Tokers.
This is the Russ Belleville Show. The Russ Belleville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it.